brought to you by the Vipassana Meditation Center, which offers courses in Vipassana meditation as taught by S.N. Goenka in the tradition of Sayaji Ubaken. You can listen to this program again online at www.planetaudio.org.nz/Vipassana Meditation. That's V-I-P-A-S-S-A-N-A Meditation. Alternate weeks will be in Hindi. We will now hear an extract from a talk given by the meditation teacher, Dr. Paul Fleischman.
The only thing that I have ever found that satisfied my sense of integrating my daily life with reality, or to be somewhat melodramatic, we could say ultimate reality, is Vipassana meditation. So I want to talk about Vipassana from the standpoint of being not a religion, not a philosophy, but a practice of living with ultimate reality that gives meaning to immediate reality. The biggest step from geology, these planetary metaphors that I've been playing with, the biggest step from geology to Vipassana has to do with the fusion of the numinous and the ethical. There was a philosopher of religion, a historian of religion, actually, at the University of Chicago, Mircea Eliade. He was an author of many, many books. He pioneered the field of comparative religion starting early part of the century and wrote books over a long time, died only about a decade ago. He classified religions into two major groups. One major group of religions are those that organized people around the manipulation of other powers. There's some big guy up there, he's got some power, he's either the chief king or the biggest god, and if I shake these bones right, if I say this prayer right, if I do this dance right, I will make him be on my side. Religion begins essentially as a form of coercion, magical coercion. The ritual compels the divine into being on your side. But the second major stage of religion, into which the major religions of the world are supposed to fit, come under the heading of those religions that fuse the ethical and the numinous. That is to say, the numinous, the spiritually enlivening, the moving, emotional, powerful spiritual part of religion, has to be combined with ethics. In the second stage of religious life, we don't try to coerce gods, we try to follow their laws, get along with them, do the right thing. And that will put us on their side. Vipassana meditation is an extension of that. Its history in this planetary era goes back into the days of ancient India, when India was moving away from the first stage of religion. Ancient Indian religion, the Vedic religion of India, was a magical coercive religion. If you sacrificed a horse in the right way, with the right kind of fire, with the right kind of ceremony, the gods of the heavens would have to protect your armies. And about 600 or 800 BC, the peoples of India began to look upon life in a different way and began to consider the ethical importance of religion. Well, maybe we can't coerce the gods into doing things just by sacrificing a horse. Maybe we should be doing some nice things for the people around us, and maybe the gods will like us better, and that way they'll protect our army. In that era of time, there arose a person known to history as the Buddha, who eliminated the step about the gods, either denying their existence, but neither giving any importance to them, and said that the only way that a human being's heart and mind can be integrated to live with the ultimate reality of time is to practice ethics to its highest possible extension. The difference between geology, mere speculation about time, walking around on those majestic tundra barrens, and thinking, what is the meaning of my life? The difference between that and having a daily meditation practice that can root you in ultimate reality, the difference is not a magical, coercive practice that you trick your body through some meditation tactic. The difference is in the practice of the ethical. That's the fusion of the numinous and the ethical. So if we go back to Vipassana meditation, Vipassana is a meditation that is based upon reality, just reality, nothing other than reality. There's no religion, there's no God, not that a God may or may not be real, but we don't have the clear fact. And the focus of the meditation is not any religion, not any philosophy, not even geology. It's a focus upon change, change, constant change, change upon change, just like you see or feel if you go to Newfoundland. The focus of Vipassana is the reality of eternal change, incessant change, within your own mind and body. You yourself become the Newfoundland. You yourself become the Galapagos of reality, the experimental site in which you experience the ultimate truth. However, in order to have that realization, in order to meditate upon that truth in an interior, personalized, meditative, internal manner, the first and the essential and the critical step is to live a life that is primarily attuned to the feelings and well-being of others around you. That step is not obvious from geology. That's the discovery of Vipassana, or we could say of any civilized life, of which Vipassana is a focalized and conscious expression. So if you were to go to a 10-day Vipassana meditation course, you would find, I'm not going to describe it in vigorous detail because there's all kinds of information around here and I want to stick to its sort of its flavors. The first step in taking a Vipassana meditation 10-day course is to take the vows of moral lifestyle, not to kill, not to steal, not to lie, not to commit sexual misconduct, and not to use intoxicants, to talk about contacting reality, a meditation that's truly based upon reality with nothing added, nothing taken away, just reality, the true reality of change in all things at all times. To experience that reality in the human heart, the gateway to that experience is the feeling of communion and kinship with all living things. The attitude of compassion awakens and enables that attitude towards oneself. The second step in a Vipassana meditation course is to, after having taken these vows, to spend 3 days in silence. The whole 10-day course is taught in silence. And the first 3 days of silence, you focus on your breathing, the breath going in and out of your nose, during which time you become extremely restless, bored, and feel like you're being driven crazy. Now, why go to such an incredibly trivial event after such grand concepts? And there's a reason. The first thing that blocks a human being from living in reality is the absence of an ethos of love and compassion. Once that ethos is established in your heart, the communion of reality can be felt. The common bond we have with every living thing is our transiency, our vulnerability, their vulnerability. The second thing that blocks us from a profound awareness of reality is our inability to concentrate. We are constantly distracted by other concerns than ultimate reality. Not that that's wrong. Of course, we all have many, many concerns that do need to be fulfilled, like how to get a roof over our heads, how to get food on our table. Not that other concerns are wrong, but if we are continuously subject to and prey to trivial reality, how can we ever get to ultimate reality? So Vipassana practice first consists of ethical vows and ethical feeling states, and second consists of practicing meditation that's focused on breathing with the goal of being able to remove your mind from your daily distractions and to focus it upon the subtlest, softest, immediate sensation in one's body, the feeling of breath going in and out, trying to attend to that without any distraction. And the goal is to be able to become master of one's own mind, not to have one's mind controlled by external events that call the mind away, but to be in the opposite state, to be the master of the mind, to say, I will place my mind here, I will keep it here, and I'm in charge. I can do that. Actually, you can't do that. It's very difficult. the next week of a Vipassana meditation course, 10-day introductory course, the next week consists of practicing awareness of the sensations of one's own body. And as one practices awareness of the sensations of one's own body, one is also becoming aware of one's own mind, since the mind and body are connected. Vipassana, the uniqueness of Vipassana, is that it is meditation only upon reality. That means there's no mantra, there's no imagery, there's no religious ideology, there's no belief system, there's no philosophy. The focus of meditation is, what is the nature of the ultimate reality of my mind and my body? If you simply make the effort to practice Vipassana, and that means to observe the sensations of your body and see what you learn, every human being will learn the same thing. We're all different in many ways. So somebody will learn, well, I got a backache, and somebody else will learn, I don't have a backache. Somebody else will learn, I can sit still for an hour pretty easily, and someone else will learn, it's very hard for me to do that, I have to keep working at it. But everyone will learn one thing that's the same, and that is every single second, your body is entirely different than it was a second ago. Every moment, your body is changing. You're constantly, constantly, constantly changing. It was nice to have that baby crying. I've just sent my son off to college. It's so amazing to watch a child grow up. And one of the most disconcerting things about it is the parent, no matter how the parent may think that they're a Vipassana meditator and very intelligent and so forth, the parent will feel, I am standing still watching this person grow. The person is born, I'm a young parent, and then the person, in a flash, leaves home and goes to college, and suddenly I have gray hair. Everything is changing all the time, every second. There are no 2 seconds that are alike. That same vision of reality that you can get by studying the history of Newfoundland, by studying the history of the earth, by following the migration of the caribou, that same sense of change upon change upon change, infinite change that we can't see any beginning. If it began when the earth was born, then what was going on before the earth was born? If it began when the Big Bang of the universe started, then what was going on before the Big Bang started? That change is going on in your body right now, every single second. And to the extent you can just observe without adding any philosophy, any religion, and just observing your body every second, a continuous attempt to observe, you come upon ultimate reality. Ultimate reality means ceaseless change in every single molecule. When I say every single second, second is a long time. Every microsecond, every millisecond, ceaseless change is the one absolute truth of the universe happening in your body. Now, to the extent that a person feels that, and almost everybody has that experience when they take a 10-day Vipassana course, that they encounter within the mass of their own body the one absolute universal truth about the material universe. It's particulate, incessant change. Now, to the extent that a person feels that, and almost everybody has that experience when they take a 10-day Vipassana course, that they encounter within the mass of their own body the one absolute universal truth about the material universe. It's particulate, incessant change. When you have that experience, and people have different amounts, different intensities of this capacity to objectively observe, the next thing that happens is quite the opposite to what I, as a young, speculative, geologically minded person might have imagined. Because when you're on top of those rocks and wondering about the nature of the earth, the world seems quite cold, incomprehensibly cold. The reason for one's own birth seems terrifyingly unplumbable. But when you have that experience inside your own body, the exact opposite happens. It's as if a curtain of ignorance is lifted, or for a moment, part of a curtain of ignorance is lifted, and a great fountain of love and joy opens up in your heart. The recognition stops being about the incomprehensible magnitude of things, and the recognition becomes the fusion of all past moments, all of Pangaea, all of geology, all of the billions of Earth epochs, or the epochs of other Earths, or of other eras of the Big Bang, however you conceive of infinite time, all of that has culminated right now. This is the moment in which all the rest of all the eternities that will ever be will all be born out of this moment. There will be hundreds of billions of years of rocks, or if this planet is exterminated, there are actually many hundreds of billions of planets that we know of. And everything that's being formed is passing through this moment. All of karma, meaning all of causality, all of the future, all that will happen to us is being shaped right now. And the gift of each moment is the gift of the freedom to create ourselves in the next moment. And the entryway into this vision, as we discussed, there are two entryways. The first is ethics, the sense of communion, the sense of common life between us and all living things. And the second is the practice of Vipassana, meaning objective observation of the change of all body sensations all the time inside one's own self. This entryway leads to a sense of freedom in this moment to create the next moment. And since the entry requires communion or compassion, the obvious direction of wherever you would want to go in the future is the direction of human love, compassion, harmony among all beings, as well as you can create it, as often as you can create it, as far as you can create it. There's hardly a religion or a philosophy anywhere in the world that would disagree with that conclusion. But the uniqueness of Vipassana is that that conclusion is arrived at through personal experience based upon objective observation of one's own self at the level of body sensations, simply observing reality as it is, without elaborating any philosophy, without joining any cult or religion or belief system. It's the visionary extension of the scientific attitude. Often it is said that the scientific attitude culminates in, say, a cold, we almost conflate the two, a cold scientific worldview. But actually, if you extend the scientific worldview towards yourself in the manner I described, you end up with a gush of affiliative feelings. If people take Vipassana meditation courses, the main experience they have is moments of such liberating joy, interspersed with hours of boredom, distress, fear, and other forms of very common human suffering. Because most of our minds, most of the day, most of our minds are caught up with immediate delusional preoccupation. There's a great deal of talk in America about using the terms like transcending the self that are connected to the New Age religions. And of course, that's a term that could be applied to the description of Vipassana I gave, but the difference is that while it's technically accurate, Vipassana moves you through yourself to liberate yourself from yourself. It is not a mere excited, euphoric fantasy union with something other than the self. And in reality, each one of us are burdened by enormous amounts of worries, problems, job problems, money problems, problems with the people we live with, problems with the people we wished we lived with. It's hard every day. So the avenue into the great fountain of love and compassion that we actually contain within us, the obstacle to that is our daily delusional existence. And meditation is hard work, a hard journey of that effort to focus, that effort to concentrate, and then first the effort to concentrate on breathing, then the effort to concentrate on body sensations, and in the process, unearthing all of us that is so caught by what is transitory and ultimately unrealistic. All of us have many, many layers of that. And so all of us, when we meditate, find meditation to be incredibly joyous and liberating, but also very arduous, very hard work, actually quite a rigorous discipline. So if and when there are people who are inspired to come to a Vipassana course, I think they can't be overly enthusiastic. Their goals can't be too high, but they do have to recognize that the actual experience of a course is the experience of very, very hard work, more or less analogous to it's exhilarating to be hiking along the crests of the Long Range Mountains in Newfoundland, but to get there you have to hike up through mud and snow melt and fern jungles, and it's really a mess getting there. And that's the way every hike is, and that's the way every meditation course is also.
Which means to see things as they really are, is one of India's most ancient techniques of meditation. It was taught in India about 2,500 years ago as a universal remedy for universal ills. Vipassana meditation is a simple, practical technique which enables one to lead a more positive, balanced, and happy life. It focuses on the deep interconnection between mind and body, which can be experienced directly by disciplined attention to the physical sensations that form the life of the body, and that continuously interconnect with and condition the life of the mind. Although Vipassana was practiced and taught by the Buddha, it contains nothing of a sectarian or religious nature. The technique of Vipassana meditation is taught at 10-day residential courses, during which participants learn the basics of the method and practice sufficiently to experience its beneficial results. More than 100 meditation centers have been established around the world, including in Asia, the Middle East, Europe, North America, and Australasia. New Zealand has had a center since 1987. This program is brought to you by the Vipassana Meditation Center, which offers courses in Vipassana meditation as taught by S.N. Goenka in the tradition of Sayaji Ubaken. The New Zealand Centre is located at 153 Burnside Road, Makarau, Kaukopakopa, approximately 1 hour drive north of Auckland. The website is www.medini.dharma.org. That is www.medini.dharma.org. The phone number is 09-420-5319. That's 09-420-5319. There are several centres in Australia. For more information, contact Dharma Bhumi at 212 Station Street, Blackheath, New South Wales. The telephone number is 02-4787-3600, and the website is www.bhumi.dharma.org. That's www.bhumi.dharma.org.